And our main speaker this evening is Felicia.
Hi, I'm Felicia. I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to all the people counting days, and welcome to everybody visiting from out of town. Thank you, Nye, for asking me to speak. This is a really great meeting and a really great group, and gosh, I have so many amazing memories and like gifts I've gotten from Atlantic group meetings. So I'll tell you a little bit about my stats. My sobriety date is July 12th, 2003. And I have a sponsor, her name is Mary, and I'm on steps 9, 10, 11, and 12, and my home group is No Serenity Till Brooklyn. Gosh, I'm one of those people that, like, when people mention AA, or they say, like, I just went to my first AA meeting, I'm like, oh my God, that's amazing. like things are gonna get so much better. And people usually get scared, because, like, no one wants to hear that, like, on day one, or day, like, negative one. But I was at my home group last night, and, you know, we have the little, like, AA sign outside, and there's always, like, a big drama with the AA sign. Like, did somebody put out the sign? Did somebody bring in the sign? It's one of the things we forget. I have to take it home. I have to bring it back next week. Like, it's, for some reason, I'm like, why do we need the sign? Everybody knows where the meeting is. Like, there's a website, you know? And last night, we were packing up the meeting, and a guy walks in, and he said, you know, he came over. I was, like, up front, you know, putting the, our binder away. And he said, is this an AA meeting? And I was like, yeah, you know, it just finished. And he said, you have AA meetings here? And I was like, yes. And he said, I live down the street. And I was like, oh, that's great. You know, are you an alcoholic? And he said, yeah, I relapsed, and then I moved here, and I just haven't been back to meetings. I just couldn't go. And he said, and I walked by your sign, and then I stopped, and something told me to, like, go back. And he came back, you know, when he came inside, and I, you know, introduced him to one of the guys, and, you know, gave him a meeting list, and, you know, took him out for fellowship, and, you know, amazing, like, AA signs, you know, like, something we take for granted. So I'm, you know, he's one of those people that I'm like, things are going to get so good for you. But I did not feel that way when I came in. I came in, like, not an alcoholic. I'm just coming. I'm not an alcoholic. I'm here. And the reason I came in is because a therapist told me that he can help me, but not with my alcoholism. And I was like, alcoholism, schmalcoholism, like, I don't have that. And he was like, how do you know you don't have that? And I was like, well, when I haven't drank for like 9 days. And he was like, how do you know it's 9 days? I was like, because I know I last drank. And he said, why do you know that you did? And I said, well, when I drink, bad things happen. And he was like, right, not an alcoholic. Okay, so what kind of bad things? And, you know, I told him a little bit about my drinking history. You know, I started drinking really young. It was just, there was a lot of alcohol in my house, and I wasn't born in this country, and they kind of, like, gave kids alcohol from, like, the beginning, like, if you had a fever or something. And I liked it. You know, I started going to parties as, like, you know, a 10-year-old, and they would make me sing, and it was, like, easier with alcohol. So I drank a lot as a kid, and then I started sort of more drinking on purpose. And when I was in high school, I used to have a car because my high school was far away from my neighborhood. And, you know, I would, because I had a car and it was New York City, all my friends would want to go to, like, the clubs. That was, like, a thing when I was a kid. And I would drive all my friends to the clubs and then, you know, drive them all home. And it was really easy to drink at that time. Like, you basically needed some sort of ID that said you were 18, and then you were in. And even though you couldn't drink until you're 20, like, everybody just drank. So I started blacking out, you know, from the very start. I would drive home in blackouts. And I, you know, I guess would drive my friends home, and then I'd park the car. And I would come out of my building, and my dad would say, what in the world happened to the car? And, you know, it'd have, like, a big scrape on the side. And I said, I don't know, it's this horrible neighborhood. Somebody must have, like, dinged it, you know, overnight. And he was like, well, that would be true if it wasn't the side that was, like, on the sidewalk. So, you know, it's, and it, you know, like, I can laugh about it now, but, like, it's horrible that I drove in that state. Like, it's, like, I took my life and other people's lives, you know, in my hands. and I went away to college. I drank with abandon. I blacked out. I made a horrible, horrible mess. I, you know, went to a sorority formal, and it was like away at a hotel, and the next morning, my date woke me up. All I remember is like starting doing like Jaeger shots and Goldschlager. I don't even know if they make that anymore. And we were doing shots, and the next thing was the next morning. And my date woke up, and he was like, "We have to get out of here." And I was like, "Why?" He's like, "We have to get out before anybody wakes up in the hotel." And I was like, "Why?" And he said, "You don't remember what you did last night?" So apparently, I got really sick, and the pledge master was trying to like help me because I was really sick, and I punched her. And I was like, "No, I don't remember that at all." And I mean, it was just like one thing after the other. And then I moved to the city and drank, you know, got one of those jobs where you could like show up at 11. So I went out every night with my friends and drank a lot. And I had gotten a job working for somebody, and he had like a lot of like famous clients, and it was his 50th birthday. So I planned this huge surprise party, and like all of his like famous people like chipped in, and we had this like very amazing party. And I was so nervous to be around these people because, you know, like Edwin said, like I grew up, I felt less than, my parents barely spoke English, like who am I to be like here? So I got a very expensive haircut, and then I went there and I started drinking Tanqueray and tonics because I just needed two to like feel okay. And I remember drinking the first few, and then I don't remember anything. And I remember being like in a brownout, and I was like holding myself up against the wall of the restaurant, and I just needed to get to the door. So I was like feeling my way over, because I didn't want anybody to see me. Like, I didn't want to lose my job. I didn't want to be embarrassed. And somebody at the door said, you know, "Are you okay? My driver can take you home." And I was like, no, I'm fine. And I lived in New Jersey at the time with my dad. I was afraid, like, I couldn't even give this, like, driver directions. So after that, the next thing that happened is I came to behind the wheel of my car on Route 4 in New Jersey. And I don't remember how I got there. I assume I, you know, got my car out of the garage, and I took the George Washington Bridge, because I assume that's what I did. And I came to, and I hit, like, the side, you know, the thing that separates you from the other side, and then the car flipped, and I got out, and people stopped to help me, and I got out of the car. It was like this like little Volkswagen, and I got out, and I was like on my hands and knees, and like people came, and I like saw, and I was like, "Oh, my dad's gonna be so upset," and mostly about the car, I thought, and people were like, "Are you okay? You know, like, you gotta stay, like the ambulance is coming, you know, you're gonna be okay." And I was like, "I'm fine. I'm totally fine." And there were like six guys there. I'm like, "If you guys can just help me put the car back up on the wheels, I'll be totally fine." Like, no concept. And it was kind of like the story of my life. Like, everything's fine. Like, everything's fine. And that went on for a few more years. And then, you know, I moved to the city so I wouldn't have to drive anymore. And then I started to try to control my drinking because, like, the embarrassing stuff just kept getting worse, and I was afraid of what was going to happen to me. And I tried to control my drinking, and my life got so much worse. I was so miserable, and I was, like, insane. And I made some really, really bad decisions. I met a man, and I started dating him, and there were definitely some inconsistencies in things that he told me, but I was like, you know, probably just a misunderstanding. And 2 years into our relationship, I found out that I didn't know his name, that like he had lied about his name, his last name, I knew his first name. Then I asked him to move in with me, and then we like started a business together, and I like signed over everything like I owned, and like then like cried and asked my dad to sign over everything because like this was a really good idea. So then, you know, in my last year of drinking, he was sentenced to federal prison for 5 years, and I had this like business that was like just completely blowing up, and my life had gotten really, really small. And I was in my apartment, and I couldn't go to the office anymore because every time I went to the office, people sued me. And I figured, like, if you're not there to get the papers, you're not technically sued, which isn't true. Nobody, that is not legal advice. So I wouldn't go, and I was at home, and I wouldn't turn on my lights. I would only, like, have my computer screen on. And I had come up with this brilliant idea that I would buy a big life insurance policy and commit suicide. And I had the woman come over to my house. You know, she was a family friend, bought, like, the biggest policy I could afford, didn't pay my rent, paid that policy. And, you know, I was just going to, if I couldn't figure it out, like, if I couldn't make it all better, I was going to kill myself. And I was sitting in my living room, and I, you know, I didn't grow up religious. We had gone to church, and when I was little, I couldn't sleep. So my mom would say this, like, prayer, and she would, like, touch my head like this, like, very, just, like, stroking my head, and it was, like, the only thing that could help me go to sleep was when she said this prayer. And, but I didn't, like, I wasn't religious, and I thought to myself, and I have no idea why, maybe there is something out there, like, maybe there is a God, maybe there's something. And, I thought, well, like, it's impossible because there's so many people, there's one God, that makes no sense. And people pray, I know people that pray, they seem to get a lot out of it, but it doesn't make sense because there's so many people. And then I came up with a formula that there is one God, and there's billions of people, and everybody gets 15 minutes of God's time. And it depends on, like, when you use it. And, like, if you use it for something, like, dumb, like a job, then, like, you know, when something is, like, somebody's sick, you've, like, already used your 15 minutes. And that seemed to make sense to me. And so I was planning on killing myself, so I figured, like, I'm going to use it up. I think this is as bad as it's going to get. And I sat in my living room, and I said, God, like, if there's something out there, if there's a reason for this, please help me. Like, please, please help me. And if I'm just talking to the thin air, then I'll just keep making bad decision after bad decision and just, you know, implode. And within a few weeks, I had spoken to somebody who said, you should see my therapist, maybe. And I ended up in this therapist's office who asked me about my drinking. And I, like, told him my story. And he was like, right, okay, not an alcoholic. He said, you know, I need you to go to meetings. And I said, fine, you know, I've been to one before because somebody else had told me that. But I'll go, and then I'll see you next Tuesday. And I, you know, came to meetings, and I came to this group, and I remember, you know, hearing the speaker, and I was like, a lot of that stuff sounds familiar. Interesting. If only alcoholism was my problem. Like, if only it were, like, that simple. Like, I have so much more. Like, you know, I can't open my mail. I owe a million people money. Like, drinking is the only thing that's working. If only that was the problem in my life. And, you know, I started to identify little by little, but I was not gonna count days. That seemed ridiculous to me. And I'm not gonna get a sponsor because then I have to, like, talk to somebody. And my life was not one of, like, honesty. You know, like, I lied, cheated, and stole. And I was not about to, like, sit down with somebody and tell them things. So I was at this meeting, and I remember somebody said, like, oh, all the answers are in this book. And I was like, great, I can read. And so I bought the book, and then I came back the next week, and then somebody that, you know, remembered I was new, it's always funny that, like, we don't think they can tell we're new. And he said, you know, how are you doing? It's good to see you back. And I said, oh, I'm great. I bought the book with the answers, and I bought the other book, you know, the blue one. And I'm making lists, and I was, like, writing sort of a fourth step and put it in, like, Ziploc bags. It's, like, insane. And he's like, great, keep coming back. You know, you have a lot to offer. So that was the right thing to say, because I was like, of course, I'll come back. And I remember I wasn't going to get a sponsor, and Jeff would see me at this meeting, and he would be like, so, did you get a sponsor yet? And I was like, stop talking to me. You're creeping me out a little. Like, why are you following me around? And then he saw me at the Thursday meeting, and he was like, so, did you get a sponsor yet? And I was like, I don't know what he wants. And the reason I felt uncomfortable is because I didn't know that people just wanted to help other people. That was not my life. I never did anything for anybody without wanting something in return. So Jeff introduced me to my first sponsor, Lucy, and just like Hillary, I was like, I don't know, she's younger than me, like, she's blonde. She carries a backpack. She's from like this. What is she gonna like help me with? Like her head's gonna spin if I tell her like what's going on in my life. But she took me through the steps, and she was amazing, and she saved my life. I got so much from her. And she, you know, I was terrified of the fifth step. I was terrified of telling anybody. And so when I asked her to sponsor me, I didn't say it that. I said, "Would you take me through the first three steps? Because like after that, I'll find somebody that can like deal with this, like some sort of like, I don't know, psychologist / forensic accountant / like criminal defense attorney." And she like paid me no mind and just took me through the steps. And I started doing service. I started doing correction service, which is amazing. And the dance that they have to raise money for intergroup for corrections is the most fun I've ever had sober. Like year after year, the most fun. So if you're thinking of going, I highly recommend it. I started going through the steps, and I remember at my third step, Lucy, my sponsor, gave me this box, and she called it a God box. And I was like, this, again, like, seems ridiculous. And it was a box, and it had a little piece of paper in it, and it said, like, basically, this is your God box. When you think about your problems, write them down and put them in this box, and whenever you think about them again, remember that you gave it to God. And just go about and do the next right thing. And I put a lot of things in that box. So I got like a sober job. You know, they liked me. I did well there. I didn't want to get a job, but Lucy said, "Oh yeah, you're." Because they made me wear a skirt, and I was like, "Obviously, I can't take the job." And she was like, "You're going skirt shopping. Congratulations!" So I got a job, and I started making amends. And some of the amends were difficult. I was terrified to face these people because I had been really dishonest and unreliable with people. And I sat down with somebody that, a lot of them went really well. I sat down with one person that I had lied to who was a friend, and I took a tremendous amount of money from her and lied to her about what I was gonna do with it. And I sat down with her a few blocks away from here, and I told her that I had lied and told her the truth. And said, "You know, I have this sober job, and I'm going to pay you back." And she was not happy, and she did not say, "Well, I'm so glad you're sober." She was just really hurt. And a few months later, I was at my work in my skirt, and two people walked into where I work, and they said, "You know, we have some bad news for you." And I was like, "Okay, great. Like, are you returning something? Because I work on commission. It's not that big a deal." And they said, "You're under arrest." And I was like, okay, that's bad news. That qualifies. And off I went. And the person that I had made amends to pressed charges against me. And I always knew that that was a possibility. I had prayed about it. I had spoken to my sponsor. I had spoken to attorneys. I knew that that was a possibility. And I spent that night in jail. And I didn't have access to, like, I couldn't call my sponsor, I didn't have a phone, I couldn't, like, go to a meeting, I didn't have my big book, you know, they took everything away from me. What I did that night was I prayed and meditated, because I was in so much fear, and I came out of my meditation, and I realized that I was okay. I had made the decision to make that amends, because it was somebody that was in my life, and I was going to continue to lie, and if I continued to lie, I thought I was going to drink, and I thought I had done the right thing, and because of that, I was going to be okay. It took like a few years for that to like wind its way through the criminal justice system, and I had a lot of amazing attorneys that helped me, and I had a really wonderful sponsor at the time, and my sponsor at that time told me, he said, "You know, what you need to do is you need to go from faith in God to reliance on God, or else you're not gonna make it through this." And, you know, I had to completely rely, like, no matter what happens, I'm gonna be okay, whether, like, I'm found not guilty, whether I go to jail, you know, I'm taking meetings there anyway, I'll just take more meetings, which is not what I was looking forward to, but anyway, it worked its, you know, its way through the system, and I didn't have to, like, serve any time, and, sometime later, I did get fired from that sober job because they found out about what happened, and I was devastated. I was like, come on, like, I make amends, like, I'm, you know, paying restitution, I'm doing all this stuff, I'm sponsoring women, and I couldn't believe that that could happen to me. I felt like God, like, pulled the rug out from under me, and And I had another sponsor at the time who wrote a prayer in my like step workbook, and she said, because I couldn't get past the resentment and the fear. And she said, you know, dear God, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you for everything you've given me and everything you've taken away and everything you've left me with. And she said, you don't have to believe it, but you just have to say it. So I said it, and you know, I was unemployed for a while. I got some part-time jobs, and then I decided that I wanted to go back to school. And I applied. I had all these attorneys help me, and I applied to law school, and I got accepted. And I knew that, you know, I have a criminal record. It's not definite that you're going to be admitted to the bar because there's like a character and fitness committee, and you know, they can be harsh. And you know, I made it through law school, and I, you know, graduated and passed the bar, and then, you know, I had to go through the character and fitness committee, and they, like, have you answer these questions, like, have you ever been to court? And I'm like, oh my God, which time? Have you ever been sued? I was like, oh no. And I was like, there aren't enough pages, so I had, like, all these, like, extra papers, and, like, my file was ridiculous. It was like doing, like, a fifth step or an eighth step, and I got my interview date. It took, like, a year for me to get them everything they needed. And I sat down with the woman, and she said, you know, I couldn't read this. She's like, it's just too long. She was like, just tell me how you got here. So I started speaking, and she was like, relax. You don't have to be nervous. If anybody's going to admit you, it's me. That's why they sent you here. Just tell me what happened. And I told her everything. And she started asking me all these things about sobriety. And she said, you know, is your husband sober? How many sponsees do you have? How many service commitments? And I was like, oh my God, they sent me to somebody sober. Which they didn't. But I asked her how she knew. And she said, you know, one of her childhood best friends had been in and out of AA for years, like years. And she said, you know, that she has been to meetings and she has met people with long-term sobriety. And she has tremendous respect for this program and for people that stay sober and do service and work this program. And, you know, at first, you know, she said this thing about, like, I want you to clear up this other thing and then come back in a month. And I was like, oh, that's such a letdown. And, like, that day I had sent, like, a huge check to, like, the person that pressed charges against me because I, like, had gotten out of school, gotten a job, and, like, every month would squirrel away money. That's what my sponsor told me to do. And then sent, you know, one big chunk. And, like, the day that I had my interview, I sent the check. It was like, God, you know? And the next day, the woman that interviewed me called me, and she said, you know, I know I told you to come back in a month, but I've changed my mind. I'm going to recommend that you be admitted. She said, you know, like, I believe in you. She said, you know, if I'm wrong about you, then I'm wrong about everything. She said, I think, like, you're going to give back so much more than you ever took. And I think that she believed that because she met a lot of people like you. You know, like she met alcoholics in recovery. And it reminds me of like the incredible responsibility I have like to people that are in AA and not in AA. That like if they know I'm sober, I have to like act with complete integrity. And, you know, that my word is my bond. Because I never know who I'm helping down the road by being that example. You know, listen, I've had amazing things in my life. Like, I met a wonderful, wonderful man that I married. And, you know, in my God box was like, no one will ever want to be with you. You have, like, you're an alcoholic. You have a criminal record. You have to... And got to take that out of my God box. You know, you'll never live in a nice place. Blah, 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 blah. Nope, got to take that out. You know, you'll never... There was an amends that I had to make to my dad. And that was like, it was like a huge financial amend, and I had caused him a tremendous amount of stress. I mean, I had to call him that night that I was arrested and tell him where I was. And that's not something that like any dad should ever have to hear from his daughter. And I caused him a tremendous amount of like financial hardship and problems with his wife and like nearly like ruined their marriage. And there was one thing in my God box that I was like, if I can get rid of this debt in my dad's name, I'll never want for anything, like anything. You could take everything else away. Like, I just want to give him that peace. And, you know, I had tried all this stuff through lawyers, through everything, and it wasn't working. And then my sponsor was on the phone with me, and I was like crying about it. And, you know, I had made so many other amends, but this one I just couldn't do. And she said, you know, why don't you call their 800 number? And I was like, oh, their 800 number. I've been talking to their lawyers. Like, I'm so many, like, steps up the food chain. And she said, all right, well, I suggest you call their 800 number. And I was like, well, I have nothing left. So I called their 800 number. And within a year from that phone call, from sending in a small payment, from talking to people, you know, they said, you know, if you send us X amount, it'll be done. And that's what I did, and it was done. Like, I got to tell my dad that, like, so, like, that was the last thing in my God box. So, like, it really is magical. And my life is not magical. Like, my life, I have, you know, I have problems. Like, I have all sorts of character defects that come up at work. I have a lot of fears. You know, there are still things that, I know I said I wouldn't want for anything, but there are still things that, like, I really want in my life that, like, haven't happened for me. And, you know, I don't know if they will. You know, I think that, I believe that God's got a plan, because when I got fired, I thought it was the worst thing that ever happened to me. But looking back, it allowed me to go to law school. You know, it gave me some time to think about what I wanted. I met my husband during that time because I showed up to help somebody move, because my sponsor said, you got to get out of the house with, like, you know, you can't just sit in your house and cry on your couch. So if somebody asks you to do something, just say yes. So I said yes, and that's how we met. And we have this dog that we love more than anything. His name is Rufus. He came with that name, but he is a Rufus. And we love him more than anything. And a couple of years ago, something happened to his stomach, and he's like a big dog, and when something happens to their stomachs, they could, like, get knotted up, and it's really dangerous. And I had taken him to the park, and then I was afraid that was happening. I took him to the vet, and the vet said, okay, take this medicine, no water, no food for 12 hours. And I was like, oh, he hasn't eaten since last night, you know, and he just went to the park, he must be starving. And they said, no water, no food. And so for the next 12 hours, he just followed me around the house, like, I think I get fed now, like, come on, you know, like, just, you know, normal things. And I felt so bad depriving him of that, but I knew that, like, I was taking care of him. And I remember talking to my husband, and at the time I was going through, like, a lot of sadness about, like, you know, what I don't have yet in my life. And I said, you know, do you think that's, like, how God looks at me? Because, like, I believe that God loves me as much as I love this dog. And I said, do you think, like, I'm looking to God, like, come on, like, it's time. This is what I get now, right? And God is like, no. And not because he's denying me, but because, like, that's what's best for me right now. And, you know, I, like, if I could, like, give anybody, like, what I've most learned is that, like, every wonderful thing that's happened to me has been as a direct result of listening to my sponsor and being open-minded. You know, I've had three sponsors, and that first one, you know, I was, like, tremendously resentful after I got arrested. And, you know, for years, I was like, it's the sponsor's fault, and it's that person's fault that pressed charges against me. Until my current sponsor was like, no, like, you did those things that you made amends for, and whatever the consequence is, that's on you. It's not, you know, your sponsor for taking you through the steps. And the truth is, that if I had done it exactly as she told me, it probably wouldn't have been a crime. Because now I'm a lawyer, and now I look back, and, you know, what did she know? Like, she's not a lawyer. But it was like spiritual principles, and I had, like, a lot of pride and a lot of fear, and was like, no, I'm not going to give a little money at a time, because they're going to freak out. And, you know, if I had done that, it would have worked out differently. You know, and my sponsor now, like, told me to call that 800 number, and I got, like, the one thing that I wished for most. Like, really, if I get nothing else, the fact that, like, I made that amends to my dad means more to me than anything. And this room is really special. Like, I met, like, all my best friends here in this room. We were sober sisters together. And, you know, it's almost 13 years later, and, like, you know, we're all together. And a bunch of us, you know, live in Brooklyn and started a group together. You know, we were first bringing meetings to somebody's house, because she just had babies. And, you know, it grew, and it started a meeting, And, you know, now we have 4 meetings a week. And, you know, that guy gets to pass by and see that AA sign and come in, you know, and like, that grew out of here because this is where we all met and this is where we got sober. So I'm tremendously grateful for my sobriety and for this group and for everybody that does service in AA. Thank you.